You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Federal Premium Ammunition and their new centerfire rifle ammunition Terminal Ascent. Now, the Terminal Ascent has a slipstream polymer tip that helps flatten trajectories and initiates low-velocity expansion at longer ranges. The Terminal Ascent gives you match-grade long-range accuracy in a bonded hunting bullet, and it comes in a variety of cartridges, including the 6.5 Creedmoor, the 280 Ackley Improved, the 28 Nosler, the 7mm Remington Mag 30-06, and the 300 Win Mag. If you want to find more information about the Terminal Ascent, visit federalpremium.com. And while you're there, check out It's Federal Season, the official podcast of Federal Ammunition.
Hey, welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast Throwback Series. So on this throwback series, we put together some of our podcast greatest hits of hunting that really hit our core values of prepare, inspire, and educate hunters. Over the next few weeks leading up to and even into hunting season, we're going to revive some of our old episodes that will give you some valuable information leading up into season. So listen to these shows on your way out west or just headed to the mountain, wherever you're coming from. Just give them a listen, and I'm sure you'll pull something from these shows that lead to success in the field. Enjoy this throwback series, and don't forget to leave us a review so we know how we're doing. Check us out on Instagram, Facebook, and our website. Everything is Backcountry Rookies. Now, a quick word from our sponsors, and then we'll get into this throwback show. The Backcountry Rookies Podcast is proudly brought to you by Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting. The University of Elk Hunting is the most comprehensive elk hunting education platform that you can get. From learning and knowing how to call elk to packing an elk out of the woods, University of Elk Hunting covers every step of the elk hunting process. Use the promo code ROOKIES and save $20 on your membership today. Go Hunt Insider. Go Hunt is always working hard to add value for the insiders. On top of draw odds, unit statistics and analysis, insider points in the Go Hunt gear shop, and a ton of more features, now Go Hunt is adding real 3D maps to Insider at no additional cost. Adding these maps has solved my problems of having three screens up on my computer all the time, running Insider, Google Earth, and a mapping software. Now I got them all in one place, collected right there in Go Hunt Insider. Use the code ROOKIES when you purchase Go Hunt Insider and get $50 in gear shop credit to use in the Go Hunt gear shop. Vortex Optics. Vortex designs, engineers, and produces a complete line of premium sport optics and accessories. And did you know that Vortex is now in the apparel game? So check them out, Vortex Apparel. Vortex is dedicating to providing top quality customer service and products to the users and backs it all up with their lifetime VIP warranty. Use the code ROOKIES and save 20% off of apparel on the Vortex website. All right, welcome back to the show. This week, we're throwing way back to episode number 53 with my good buddy Kyle Camp from Valley to Peak Nutrition. I'm seeing a lot on social media. Everybody's trying to get their food bags packed up and they're trying to get themselves ready and good food ready to go. This is the episode you want to listen to. Kyle goes over all the types of food that you need, what you gain from different types of food, carbohydrates, etc., all of that kind of stuff. Really, really good show to listen to right now before you do load up those final packs. I know if you're like me, you've got a few things left to pick up. You know how I am. I'm going to have to go get some Spam. I think we talk about that a little bit on this show. So anyway, there's a few things left out there. Everybody wants to go and grab them at the last minute. Maybe this will help you make some of the good decisions that need to be made. So let's jump into it with Kyle Camp, Valley to Peak Nutrition. Welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. This week, we've got Kyle Camp coming on. You might remember Kyle from a show that we did back in January, where we were talking about prepping yourself nutrition-wise for the backcountry and starting early, getting ready for it, being not necessarily on a diet, but changing food habits and how to eat better in order to better fuel your body, to lose some weight in order to to get to where we're at now, right? Right now we're at hunting season, and or we're within a few weeks of it. A lot of us are going to be out hammering the mountains here in the next few weeks. So what I did was I brought Kyle back on, and this week we're going to talk about how the or what needs to change and how you need to fuel yourself for when you're in the mountains, when you're out there hammering it, you're doing 7 to 10 miles. What foods do you need to eat in order to fuel your body? So we talk about a lot of that stuff, and it's really good conversation. And then in the end, we kind of go through what Kyle takes with him in the backcountry in order to fuel his body from that dietitian's perspective. What does he eat? He's not just throwing any random garbage food into his food bags. He's throwing good solid food in there, and he talks about why he takes what he does. A lot of good information out there on the website. Make sure you're checking us out on Instagram at Backcountry Rookies. Facebook is Backcountry Rookies. And leave us a review. If you like this podcast, leave us a review. We appreciate 5 stars. If you're not going to leave us a 5-star, tell us why we're not a 5-star podcast so I can make it better. Don't just drop me a 3 or a 2 or a 1 star and not tell me why. With all that being said, let's jump right into it. We're a little over an hour on this podcast, so it's a little bit longer. So let's jump right into it. Kyle, welcome back to the show. We're super, super happy to have you back on here today. I know we got a lot to talk about. So welcome back.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here. I'm excited.
Me too. This is a topic that I've been wanting to touch on for a while. And looking back, for those of the listeners that were with us back in episode 25, Kyle was on here, and we were talking about the diet and nutrition and how to kind of prepare yourself long-term for the backcountry. Today, we're really going to hammer it with we're here, right? Hunting season is in like 45 days, 30 days for some people. People are going to be out there pretty close. So it's time to start dialing in food bags, figuring out what you're going to eat. And that's what this show is all about. So really quick, I want to kind of set the foundation for this thing, set the rules for it. The first thing we're going to do is I'm going to have Kyle define what macros are and some of the things that we're going to talk about throughout the podcast today, some of the more important buzzwords that we're going to have. So Kyle, let's start off. Let's talk about macros, why they're important to us, and why we need them in the backcountry.
Yeah, it's a good topic to start off with. And, you know, you sent me an outline of what we're going to talk about. So for everyone who's sort of well-versed in the quote-unquote basics of nutrition and what macros are, I'd encourage you just to stay in, because we'll get in some deeper stuff that you might like too. But there's essentially three ways we get calories. They are the three macronutrients. They are carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. We do get calories from alcohol, but there is no function that contributes to performance in any way when you have alcohol. Meaning, you know, so carbohydrates, they are the predominant fuel source of the body, particularly at high output activity. So when you're climbing mountains, when you're running an ultra, when you're cross country skiing, when you're running a marathon, when you're CrossFitting, when you're doing those things, predominant fuel source is going to be carbohydrate. And protein is the predominant macronutrient, or the predominant thing that we use to repair tissue, build tissue, and for other functions in the body. We don't tend to think of this as a fuel source in any type of exercise or even normal day-to-day stuff. It can be a fuel source. It's in less than ideal situations, but the body is an amazing, amazing thing in that it is able to constantly convert the different macros into different things to become a fuel source that the body can actually use. For people that are really interested in nerding out, you can go look up the word gluconeogenesis. And then fat is for a variety of different things, but mostly hormonal function, transports of different nutrients in the body, as well as, you know, you need a certain number of fat just to maintain some of those normal bodily functions too. Again, not usually thought of as a predominant fuel source. In a world where a ketogenic diet is becoming sort of a household word, as opposed to where it used to just be used in the clinical setting for the treatment of epilepsy and children, people now, you know, of course we've known for a while, but more and more people are starting to find out, okay, well, this can be a fuel source. It is not the body's predominant fuel source, and it definitely is not the fuel source during high output activities like climbing mountains. So hopefully that lays a bit of the foundation on what the different macros are, what their functions are, why they're important in exercise and day-to-day life. So jumping back to alcohol, all three of those nutrients, when you eat them, they deliver some sort of benefit to the body, meaning carbohydrates are going to fuel you, protein is going to repair torn and worn tissue, for example, and fat's going to support you for transport and different functions in the body. Alcohol does none of that. It just gives you calories. So certainly not, you know, on the pro, con, whatever side of alcohol, but that's to say, there is a fourth place we get calories outside the three macros, and that's alcohol, though it gives no real benefit in terms of performance nutrition to the body.
So, okay, so now that we've kind of nailed down what the macros functions are, as we listen to this and as we walk, as we go through this, you're going to hear a lot about carbs and proteins and fats and all of that stuff. So now you kind of have an idea of what they're doing inside of your body, why we're talking about them. Now, I mentioned that I was going to outline the parameters for the majority of today's conversation, and that is a backcountry hunt for two different types of people, right? But the outline is for, I think there's that people probably do about an average of 7 miles a day through the mountains. And the first thing that I want to talk about, Kyle, is that nutritional need for a person that's doing 7 miles a day. And then I kind of am curious if there's a difference between 7 miles a day for 2 days, let's say it's a weekend scouting trip, or a 5-day elk hunt, or a 10-day elk hunt. Is there a difference in those nutritional needs for each one of those using a 7-mile model?
Yeah, so if we think of the 7-mile model up front, obviously the needs are going to be different between a male and a female, which I think is an example you're going to sort of delve into next. In short, we basically have a algorithm or estimation calculation that we use to get people close to what their calorie needs are doing 7 miles in the mountains, or if they were on flat land, and we use these different multiplication factors depending on the type of activity, the length of the activity, whether it's on consecutive days, so on and so forth, to determine their calorie needs during the activity. Now, the differences between the 2-day, 5-day, 10-day thing, the general baseline recommendations and suggestions don't change, meaning you still need the same amount of calories, and those calories still need to come from a variety of different, you know, certain ranges of carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. But the longer the hunt or the activity becomes, the more important it is that you're hitting those numbers with regularity day after day. So, you know, a guy can stop by the gas station. He can certainly load up on all the little goodies that he sees there and sort of wing it for 2 days and probably come out fine, right? Be able to put in the 7 miles a day for a couple of days and still come out okay. Now, what's interesting is the body is very, very amazing in that it constantly relies on, you know, not only what you're doing the day of, but it relies on what you did the previous day. It relies on what you did before you ever showed up at the trailhead. And so it's constantly switching between fuel sources. And what I mean by that is if, you know, if you're not getting in, if you're not refueling the stored carbohydrate, which in the muscles, that's one of the places we store carbohydrate. If you're not replenishing that day after day, the likelihood that you're going to be able to, you know, take off in some drainage after a bugling elk in September, let's say, is minimal, not only from a muscular contraction standpoint, but even a mental standpoint. If you don't have the right amount of energy in you, your brain's not going to be functioning as well. And not that something bad's going to happen and you're going to need to be life flighted out. You're just not going to have the mental, sort of the mental wherewithal to really have the energy to chase down after there. It's going to be sort of a lethargic, apathetic type of a feeling that you'll run into. So the longer the hunt becomes, the more it becomes important that you're hitting those numbers day after day.
Okay. If for efficiency reasons, right? If you're going to do something and you're going to work hard and you're going to continue to push hard, it needs to be efficient. It needs to be fueled properly. Now, you're right. So earlier you had mentioned a woman versus a man, and that was the next example that I wanted to kind of throw in here on this. Is there some sort of calculation, or is there a way to figure up the difference between those two, the woman and the man?
Yeah, so there is a calculation, which would probably be easier if we just post maybe attached to this whenever you put it up on the website. But at the end of that, once we figure out what a person's baseline calorie needs are, we add in activity factors, like I mentioned earlier. And those activity factors usually range from 1.5 to 2.0. Obviously, the higher the number, the more, the greater the activity, either in difficulty, length of time, mileage, whatever. So a woman's going to need substantially less calories than a man does. But one of the biggest problems I would say that I've seen with folks who come for a plan is they are shocked by the number of calories that they actually need. So kind of the universal rule of thumb for years has always been, I'm going to hit that 3,500 calorie mark. That's what I'm going for every day. And then people get lost in the weeds about calories per ounce and aiming for that certain, 100, 101, whatever it is. And people are often shocked that the needs are much higher than that. And so, yeah, 3,500 might work okay, but I would argue that a person notices a substantial difference when they hit the actual number that is set aside for them as an individual, if that makes sense. And so if we take a 125-pound woman, we put her through this, magical algorithm, we wind up with an activity factor of 1.5. So this is on the lower end of things, and her needs are around 2,400. Whereas maybe a 200-pound man, same activity factor, his needs are going to be closer to about 4,000, covering the 5 to 7 miles that you've mentioned.
And that's so that's 2,400 calories and 4,000 calories. Okay, so what? How do those? Because I could take in a ton of calories and not get any protein.
You could eat 4,000 of those calories, and this is sort of my biggest caveat phrase. Those calories, if you're getting 4,000, but they're not the right 4,000, it will not matter. Meaning, if you're shoving in 4,000 calories of coconut oil and F-bombs, those heavy calorie, heavy fat packaged foods, I'm not dogging those necessarily, but they're predominantly fat and going to be a very, very poor fuel source if you're trying to hike up, 2,000 vertical feet just to get over get on top of the first drainage to start getting back into the hunting area that you want to be in, you're likely going to notice a pretty big tank. Your body is metabolizing anywhere between 60 and 90 grams of carbohydrate per hour. So, it's essentially using what equivocates to about two full bowls of oatmeal in an hour when you're asking a lot of it out of high output activity. So we generally, of those calories, we give anywhere between 2.7 and 4.5 grams of carbohydrate per pound of body weight, right? So we start there, and however many calories that gives us, then we know that those are spoken for. So let's just say that those wind up being about 2,000 calories of carbohydrate for our 200-pound man. Then we'll look at protein, and we generally give about 0.7 grams per pound to protein. And then let's say, for the sake of math in my head, let's just go ahead and say that that's about 1,000 calories. I'll take the rest of that, which is 1,000 calories in our example, and I'll give that to fat, and I'll distribute it evenly kind of throughout the day. So protein is important, but I'm not giving a bunch of protein throughout the course of the day because it's not a fuel source. It's a recovery method. And so you're most of the protein is focused and centered around evening meals. Now, there is definitely some at lunch. There's definitely some at breakfast, but I'm not trying to shove in 50 grams of protein six times a day to eat my normal, 200 grams whenever I'm at home CrossFitting five times a week, right? This is a different deal. So I generally will, and this isn't like, oh, this isn't something I came up with on a plane once. This is from, been studied long, long time and put out by, bodies of evidence that this is how much the body utilizes and this is how much we need to give athletes because, that's one thing hunters are. People don't think, oh, well, I'm just a hunter. I'm an athlete. No, you're no different than somebody who's running an ultra or somebody who's doing a cross-country ski. You're out there exerting a lot of effort over 5 to 10 days and you need to fuel like an athlete.
You put it, so this backcountry hike or hunt, you're putting that activity level at a 1.5. What is something that would be at a 2.0? Because I think a backcountry hunt is pretty physically active. So I'm curious, what is a 2.0?
That's a good point. So the steeper the country, the less sturdy the terrain, the longer the mileage, the higher that activity factor comes up. The greater the heat, the lower the temperature. All of those things are sort of important factors where you that you're weighing in here. Now, let's just say that this 1.50 guy decides to use a activity factor of 2.0 and he comes out with a lot of calories. Worst case scenario in that is he's carrying extra food. It's very unlikely that he's going to be gaining weight, hiking 7 to 10+ miles per day chasing elk in September, right? So it's pretty unlikely somebody's going to be overdo that. So, I don't have a ton of I don't have a ton of reference for comparison. I've only hunted in Idaho. I've not hunted in other than Missouri. I've not hunted in other states. But here, my activity factor is closer to that 2.0 because, largely because the guys I go with, man, they'll take off for miles on an end and dive into any pit if they hear a bugle. It doesn't matter. So it is steep, steep, steep country here, and we are hiking quite a few miles, day after day. The temperature is usually hot in September. And, I know a few guys that they hunt over in the Hell's Canyon area, which is just like essentially, aptly named, dropping off into the pit of hell if you're at the top of that. And so, the guys like that, man, they are definitely earning that 2.0 activity factor, and some other guys I know that definitely hunt hard, but the country is not quite as steep and, they're putting in 7 miles, but it's 7 miles over 16 hours. And so you average that out, it ends up being, it's late in the day, whatever the math comes out to be on that, the number of miles per hour, but it's not that high. So it's constantly an effort of trying to balance enough calories versus weight versus, distribution of those calories, where should they come from and all of those things.
Gotcha. So, okay, better to go in heavy on food than not enough.
You'll have people that would sit across from me and argue till they're blue in the face. My personal preference is I would rather carry more weight and be 100% positive I've got everything that I want and need than skimp on the weight or skimp on the calories and the nutrition for the sake of making weight on something I've read somewhere. Because something to keep in mind when you're focusing on carbohydrates, which are the predominant fuel source, again, in activities like this, you're going to naturally be carrying more weight because there are half as many calories as there are in fat. But it doesn't matter if your pack is light, if it's light and full of the wrong stuff, in my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I would much rather carry 2 or 3 extra pounds of stuff if it's the right stuff, I'm okay with that. The right kind of tent in the right kind of weather means a lot versus just a tarp, right? I tried to save a pound by carrying a tarp, but I know I'm going to get snowed on. It's going to be cold and windy. So same thing goes with food.
Yeah, this is sort of a rabbit trail, but kind of along the same lines you're talking about that I think carries over into nutrition. I've got a couple of, super light one-man tents. And, now that we're starting to talk about doing an extended trip in remote Idaho Wilderness this year, I'm thinking about ditching the lightweight stuff and getting something a little more stout that's 2 pounds heavier than what I've already got. But to me, I want to stay back there if the weather gets nasty, as opposed to having to bail simply because I didn't want to carry an extra pound or two. And, you know, it carries the same mentality for nutrition for me, in that I want to be able to, on day five, if my friends kill something, I want to go be able to help them. I don't want to be mentally and physically exhausted because I didn't want to pack an extra pound. That's personal preference. It's personal preference supported by science, but other guys would say, nah, forget science, man. I'd rather just be lightweight. Lightweight till I die. So kind of to each their own, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. Well, good. So I think that was a really good example. So 200-pound guy, roughly at 4,000 calories. Let's go back. So a 200-pound guy, I want to kind of break this down. We're talking 4,000 calories. How much carbs?
So for the 200-pound guy, we're talking a low-end carbohydrate intake. And keep in mind, we're talking about a 16-hour day here roughly in September, because the days are long and they're putting in that many miles. If we're looking at that number, like we talked about, the grams per pound, it's about 550 grams of carbohydrate spaced over a day. And for the female, it looked more like 340. And keep in mind, that's the low end of these recommendations. They jump quite a bit higher. And that, you know, certainly not pitching a sale here, but the only way to really know, okay, well, how do I know if I fall in that 2.7 or that 5.4? And honestly, that's, you can take a stab at it. When I figure it out, it's more of just taking into account everything and just the sort of years of experience that I've got doing this, knowing about where someone needs to stand.
Gotcha. Man, it seems like so many carbs, but it's right. You know, when you look, I'm looking at some of these meals and things that I've got here in my little stash of goodies. You know, I grabbed a Peak Refuel strawberry granola, and that thing's got 87 grams of carbs. You know, so you eat that package or whatever, and that's 87. You're well on your way to your 550.
So something to think about, because people often, they hear that number, particularly in a society where we are so afraid of carbs now. Carbohydrates, and whether or not they are good, bad, or neutral, relies on muscular demand. The higher the muscular demand, the more carbohydrates are needed, the more now all of a sudden they become good. And so, you know, somehow in doing podcasts and, you know, just being tremendously fortunate and blessed and being able to talk to a number of different people about the topic, somehow I've sort of become known as giving people the liberty to just binge on garbage in the backcountry. And that's not like just negligence on my part. That's because your body doesn't see garbage when it's putting out that effort. It just sees, I mean, absolute jet fuel. And starts to burn it as such, man. And it's truly not only a physical help when you're back there, but man, a stack of gummy bears or a couple of Pop-Tarts can go a long way mentally when you're just tired of eating bars and granola and little things of trail mix. I mean, you all of a sudden open up a brown sugar or cherry Pop-Tart at 4 PM, and man, your whole mental game changes, right? And yeah. The beautiful part of it is it's not bad. It's not contributing to obesity. It's not causing you to have diabetes. Your body is burning through that and probably completely metabolize that Pop-Tart shortly within the evening after you've eaten it. And so people get in this mentality of, okay, well, I guess all the rules that apply whenever I'm home apply when I'm back here. And that simply is not true. And so, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but I'm certainly not negligently walking around telling people to eat crap. It's just that it's supported by science and that your body's not necessarily recognizing it as complete garbage.
Got it. Well, that Okay, so that leads me into the next question. And it's so this question is a perfectly designed food better for you than what just tastes good? And when I say perfectly designed, not a shameless plug. I literally am digging through my box of stuff here, and I got some Pro Bars, right? That's the first thing I've found that I'm looking at. And those Pro Bars, or here's an even better one, right? A Good Belly meal to go. People are, I've never had one. People are saying this thing is like designed for that heavy exertion, high backcountry hunt type of deal. Is this thing better for me than if I get up and have a Pop-Tart and a package of oatmeal before I hit the trail? And then when I'm out there, I'm eating, I'll use Peak Refuel again. I'm eating a Peak Refuel versus what I love, a slice of Spam and a bagel, you know, a couple of a bagel thins or something like that.
Oh, man.
Is that, tell me how terrible I am, and I'm okay with it.
It's not terrible, man. Just the sound of Spam makes me want to sort of throw up in my mouth, but if you like
Stop. You've never lived until you've had a Spam sandwich.
But I think, so that's a good, I mean, I think that's a good example to start with, though, is, you know, and I'll speak to the question, but the preface should be that regardless of what I say, regardless of what science says, if I make a recommendation and a person says, I know that's not going to sit well with me. So if I were to say, oh, look, nothing wrong with Mountain House, just binge on them while you're back there. And a person says, listen, I do that and I've got diarrhea and I can't even hunt. Okay. Well, you know, part of the obvious application here is you need to do what's going to work the best for you. So if you know that doesn't work for you, then don't do it. I mean, we have to find another solution. And frankly, again, that's part of the benefit in working with someone who deals with this on a day-to-day basis is you're able to get an alternative solution rather than sitting out there wandering around, shrugging your shoulders, wondering what you're supposed to do next. Is there a perfect fuel? So companies are very smart, and we have found, and when I say we, it's sort of the science-based nutrition performance community. We have found that a carbohydrate to protein ratio that refuels the best is 4:1. Right. So a four parts or 4 grams of carbohydrate to every 1 gram of protein essentially gives you enough carbohydrate to refuel the muscles and enough protein to repair anything that's been torn. Magically, Clif Bar has found this out and their bars are 4:1. Now, if you were to let me just also stop and say that I'm not married to that number, by the way, but let's just say that you were to make your own combination of 4:1 by creating, I don't know, crackers and cheese. Does the Clif Bar offer you any advantage over the crackers to cheese? No, because after you chew and swallow and everything's broken down, you are essentially left with a certain carbohydrate amount, and then you are left with the amount of protein that's going to be metabolized and absorbed. The body's not sitting there thinking, oh, this came from Clif Bar, let's use it better. Or, oh, this came from, you know, X, Y, and Z brand. Maybe we should make him do better at that. No, it just recognizes nutrients. It recognizes the macros, and that's what it goes by. Now, not to get lost, too lost in the weeds here, but the presence of fat, the presence of protein, and the presence of fiber at a meal, those things slow the rate of how fast you digest things. So if you include those three things in a meal, it's going to absorb much slower. You don't necessarily want that whenever you're hiking around in the mountains because the fuel's not available to you as fast. And then you're sitting there with a, you know, a pack around, you know, the lower part of your abdomen and your belly's full of gas. So you can't, right? You just feel bloated usually. And so you've got this pack strapped to you and it's causing you a bunch of pain. So whenever we're building plans for people, I usually focus on keeping the fiber relatively low, keeping the fat relatively low to moderate, and keeping the protein moderate. And then, you know, the evening plans are a little higher in protein because you're not hiking anymore. You're resting for the night. But hopefully that helps answer part of the question in the planning anyway.
I think it did. It's easily summarized by your body doesn't know the difference between the Spam and the Green Belly Bar or the Pro Bar or whatever it is.
Right. So. And, but, you know, but you'll also have people who subjectively say, you know, I just notice a tremendous difference whenever I eat a homemade dehydrated meal, as opposed to eating, let's just pick on everybody's favorite, a Mountain House. The carbs and the calories and the protein and all of those things could be the identical, but a person says, well, I feel better with a dehydrated meal. You may feel better. I'm not denying that, but you are getting the exact same amount of carbohydrates, proteins, and fats, and that is functioning in your muscles the same way it would, whether it was homemade and dehydrated or the way, whether it was freeze-dried at the local Mountain House factory. You are getting the same nutrition, though you may feel better with one brand or your own DIY or whatever.
So we did some question and answer stuff on Instagram, and I think right now is a good time to ask one in particular, and it's, what's a good plan to reduce the sodium and sugar intake in the backcountry? And the reason why I bring that question up now, and that's from Josh Lewis, so thanks for asking that, Josh, is because personally, I think that those homemade meals might taste better. One, because it's satisfaction of you made your own meal, right? So you know what's in it. You know what's good for you. But you've also reduced that sodium and some of that sugar. Is that logical thinking?
So a couple of thoughts on this. One, I would first ask this person, not in a defensive way, what's the reason you want to reduce the sodium and sugar intake? Do you feel awful on it? Have you noticed some problem? Have you, what's the reason? If at the end of that conversation, they say, well, the reason is I've just heard that it's supposed to be better. My suggestion would be, if it's early season and it's hot, you need that salt. If you're doing a lot of miles, you need the carbs from the sugar in whatever you're eating. Your body, again, muscle utilization, contraction, your body is using those like jet fuel. If they rebuttal and they say, oh, well, you know, I'm not worried about the salt or the carbohydrate. I just, you know, salt does this to me or sugar does this to me and I just don't feel good. But, you know, if somehow it's some sort of a feeling issue, the best way to do that would be, honestly, to make your own. That's the only real way to control some of those factors. Now, you could certainly get really, really good at reading labels and trying to find, you know, trying to match up the calories and the carbs and the different macros to meet your needs, and then find, okay, well, of these three products with similar nutrition values, which of these have the lowest sodium? And if you're doing that on every meal that you eat throughout the entire trip, well, at the end of the day, you've created a pretty significant deficit and one that you can run with. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to weigh all of those things. So again, you know, common day to day, we become afraid of a lot of different foods. Some of that stuff is warranted in the rather sedentary lives that most of us live. Other fears aren't as warranted. And so if it's strictly from a fear-based standpoint, I might come back and rebuttal with, you know, we have to rethink what we're doing on the mountain and separate it from what's good and bad in normal day-to-day life.
Got it. And I think I've heard you say that on another podcast that you did too, about the sodium, and maybe it was Cody Rich or Humpback Country or one of the others that you've been on, but you said something along the lines of, if it's September and it's hot, eat the Mountain House, because Mountain House is known to be much higher in sodium than some of these other backcountry meals and stuff, dehydrated meals, freeze-dried meals, whatever they are. And I think that's a good statement too, because a lot of times people say, oh man, you know, my hands swell up and my joints swell up because of too much sodium. But dehydration has a lot of the same effect. And one thing that you try to do is replenish electrolytes, and sodium helps with that, right?
Well, so yeah. And you know, two thoughts on that. One, you know, if a person subjectively says, man, I just don't feel well eating it, I think it's important for, like me, someone who plans these things, for people to listen to that, right? And not try to convince them otherwise. And then try to find some recommendation. I think we're often, and I say we dietitians, are guilty of saying, no, you don't know what you feel. Here's what's actually happening. but the second piece of that is, you know, when people say, oh, I'm eating, you know, I'm eating a ton of salt, I just feel swollen, blah, blah, blah. You know, so when you're above altitude, you've got shifts in blood volume, you've got shifts in fluid. You have, when you're putting out high output amounts of activity like you are when you're hiking, when you're sweating like that, a lot of the symptoms of a high salt diet are mimicked because of altitude or mimicked because of heat, dehydration, volume shifts of blood and different bodily intracellular and extracellular, so fluids inside and outside of your cells. And people are often quick to just blame the high salt diet. In reality, you could eat no salt and still experience those symptoms. So, you know, I wouldn't be too quick to jump on whatever salt you're eating and blame that on being the case, because it could very well be some of the other factors and conditions that you're putting yourself in just by being in the mountains for that many days and doing as much exertion as you are.
When should I eat and what should I eat? And I want to, the reason I'm asking that is because I want to circle back a little bit to earlier. We talked about the carbs being the fuel and the protein being the repair. So obviously you're going to eat all of this stuff throughout the day, but is it a better idea for that breakfast that you're going to have to eat something that's high carb so that you start your morning off with fuel? And then at dinner time, you try to hammer down a nice heavy protein meal to repair for the night.
So I love this question, man, because, you know, jumping back to our conversation earlier of, taking the number of calories you need does not matter unless it's the right type of calories. And the other piece that I would say that's essential in performance nutrition, maybe even more so than getting the right calories, is timing. You have to time the intake right. In other words, you can't just consume them all in the beginning of the day. You can't just consume them all at the end of the day. You can't do a third, a third, a third. If you're out 16 hours, in short, what I would do is I space them evenly over 16 hours. So, you know, if you were to be out, let me get my calculator here and come up with something for you. If you're going to be out 16 hours a day, and let's just say that you divide that 16 into five different meals, you need to roughly be thinking about eating something every 3 hours or so. Now, what those meals are comprised of is I always aim to hit about 60 grams of carbohydrate at every snack. So everything in between the meals themselves, 60 grams of carbohydrate. Again, that's based on the fact that you're burning between 60 and 90 grams of carbohydrate per hour.
Is that based on your weight?
No, that's universal.
Okay. Universal.
Now,
okay.
Now, you know, for a heavier guy who's got a higher carbohydrate need, then that number could climb. But as a low, on the low end of things, you know, the lowest I'm generally aiming for is 45 grams in a snack of carbs, usually trying to hit 60 grams, and then it could climb up from there based on a person's individual needs. So yes, you're thinking right in terms of trying to get some carbs in the morning. Again, you don't want a ton of fiber, fat, or protein, because then you're just walking around with a full belly and building a ton of gas and you feel awful. That's another thing that often contributes to people feeling bad in the backcountry. And you know, when you're doing high output activity, most of the blood from your body is going to your legs to continue the activity, which means the gut is not getting as much for digestion, which only complicates matters, and you don't want to stuff a bunch of fiber, fat, or protein in there. Does that make sense?
It does. Absolutely does.
Right. And then so there is some protein woven in breakfast, lunch, dinner, a little bit in the snacks, but my heaviest protein-based meal is in the evening. That is because I'm done hiking for the day, and my muscles can use that protein throughout the night while I'm sleeping to repair them in preparation for the next day. Now, it's incredibly important that you hit the right carb intake day after day, because your body's not just using what you're eating the day of. It's relying on what was eaten the day before. It's relying on the stores that are there. You know, we store carbohydrates in two places. That's the liver and in the muscles. The unique thing about the carbohydrate stored in the muscle is it's only for that muscle. So the carbohydrate stored in your quadriceps while you're hiking, for instance, there's a limited quantity there. Once it's gone, unless you're constantly replacing it. And so that's why I aim for, you know, high carb meals relatively frequently while you're out as able. Right now, if you get on an elk, all of a sudden, obviously you're not thinking, oh, hold on, friends, hold on, Mr. Elk, let me go ahead and eat my bar because 3 hours and 20 minutes is up and Kyle said it's time. No, keep chasing the elk and then figure it out once you're done. But but by and large, that's kind of what the way that we build a plan, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. It does. Totally. Okay. Now I wanted to move on to hydration. So hydration is key. And we actually had one of the Q&A's that I wanted to use was about hydration. My question was water only or add in mixes and supplements. Now, Remington McCauley, here's a plug for Remington. A couple weeks ago, we just did the Broadhead review. So go back and listen to Remington's podcast. It was really, really good. But Remington asked, what's the most efficient way to replenish electrolytes? So kind of mix both of those together. Is water only over the course of that 5 to 10 days, 7 miles a day? Or should we be adding in some of those supplement companies that are out there that make, I use Noon or sometimes Mountain Ops. There's a million of them out there, right? Should we be adding those into our water mixes?
So whether or not you should use only water kind of depends on the number of different factors, you know, largely temperature and heat and how much you're sweating and what the losses would be from that, you know, and even that's very individualized on, you know, what there's some real cool nerdery out there about sweat
loss.
Wait a minute.
Was that a thing? Cool nerdery?
Yeah. There's some really cool stuff out there about, you know, the rate of sweat loss and how much electrolyte each individual uses, whether or not you're a quote unquote good sweater or a bad one. You know, it depends on a number of different things, whether or not you'll need it. But let's just say that you do. Average water intake is going to vary person by person. You know, I think to give just a general suggestion is a bit risky because there are some pretty significant complications that can develop from either drinking too much or too little water in the backcountry. But most people generally, even the American College of Sports Medicine suggests somewhere between 12 and 24 ounces per hour, you know, about an Nalgene or less per hour, which is quite a bit of water unless you're sweating a ton, then you do need that much. In terms of electrolytes, you can use those Noon tabs. You know, there's a ton of them that are out there. But most of them lack any carbohydrate. Another one I just thought of was, you know, you could use salt tabs, and some people will even make their own. But something to keep in mind, if you're using table salt, it's only 40% sodium by weight. So if you're weighing that out, trying to get a certain number, there's only 40 grams of sodium in, you know, 100 grams of a table salt solution, right? So that's something interesting to keep in mind. So the Noon tabs can contain some electrolytes, but they lack carbohydrate. And so one, I don't know if it's really a secret, but one thing that I use is I will find an electrolyte supplement that's high in carbohydrate to fill up part of their carbohydrate need while replacing their electrolytes. And so it's usually rapidly digesting, which is good. It's usually got an electrolyte replacement in it, which is very good. And it prevents them from constantly having to feel full. So I might use 400 to 500 calories of one of these mixes to meet their needs in a weight efficient way. It doesn't take up a ton of room in the pack. It usually offers some variety over standard water. A lot of times, you know, above altitude, a guy will get nauseous and he can't stomach the thought of water, but he can sneak in some Gatorade or something like that.
Is that the brand you go to? I was going to ask what's your
supplement? There's two I really like. One is Gatorade Endurance Formula, which is different than this Thirst Quencher stuff you buy at the store. It's a same carbohydrate content, but it's got higher sodium values in it. It's dirt cheap. I mean, you know, if you've got some planning, you can buy a case of that stuff on Amazon for really cheap. And the other one that I like is Tailwind Nutrition. And so it's the same thing as endurance formula in that it's got a high sodium content, it's got good carbohydrate content, and it has a quote unquote dual source carbohydrate, meaning the carbs come from two different sources, which has been shown to improve how much carbohydrate you actually uptake whenever you drink it. It's a little more expensive. It's kind of a specialty order. It mixes clear, so it's not going to stain your water bladder, your Nalgene, or whatever you've got with you. It tends to taste better, and people tend to say that it sits on their stomach a little bit easier than the Gatorade will. Gatorade can tend to taste sweet, and some people get nauseous with that. So it's kind of dependent on what you can handle.
Okay. Cool. All right. Good suggestions. Now, so this is the big one, right? This is kind of what I was waiting to get to at the end here. And this is what does Kyle take in his food bags every day? And I think this is important. It's important to me from your perspective as the dietitian. What do you pack? What's in your food bag?
And it depends on if we're going, you know, quote unquote backcountry, or if we're hunting from like base camp out, and I've got the ability to be able to keep things in a cooler for a little bit longer. Regardless of which I go to, I still always aim for the same amount, the same calorie intake. And so I'm 5'6", so I weigh 145 pounds. I'm a pretty small guy, but I'm aiming for about, 4,500 calories or so per day. And to be honest with you, I probably have room at the end of the day to squeeze more in if I wanted to. I still feel like I'm relatively hungry, even whenever I'm hiking that much. So breakfast, let's just take like a backcountry example, I guess. Breakfast would tend to be, usually some oats, and a decent amount of oats too. And then I'll do like, I could do a flavored packet. So that tends to be a little higher carbohydrates because they add some sugar and some fruit to that, as opposed to just the regular rolled oats. Nothing wrong with rolled oats, but if you're trying to get your carb intake to meet a certain number, that's a way to get it up. And then I'll add just some sort of scoop of whatever flavored protein I like. I tend to like the vanilla or the strawberry the most, just personal preference. And then I'll put some dried fruit in it. I'll add some peanut butter to that and then sprinkle some granola on it. So my breakfast alone is hovering, 600 calories plus, and lots of carbs in that.
Okay. So it does, to me, that doesn't sound like it's, you're buying the off the shelf, already ready to go instant packs. You're making your own with protein powder and dehydrating your own fruits.
Yeah, so
is that right? Okay, man, that sounds good.
Well, so now you can accomplish the same thing by buying those packets. So you can do that too. Buy the packets that are already made, like peaches and cream, the generic brand at your grocery store. Empty those into a Ziploc baggie, and then add everything into the Ziploc baggie. So you're not back there fooling with dumping, six different bags of crap. Everything's already in there and ready to go. You're not trying to fumble with opening two bags of oatmeal, and then you got your separate bag of granola, and then you got a little Tupperware bag of raisin. I just put it all in one.
Okay. Got it.
Does that make sense?
It totally does. Yep.
And then, a couple hours later, and I was going to say, this is probably one of my favorite snacks, but then thinking about what I take throughout the course of the day, I'd probably say that about everything, man. I just love.
Well, until I mentioned Spam, and now you have a new favorite that,
yes, right,
is going to take over. Spam's going to rule your life from now on.
You got it, man. You know the deal. Oh, and then, of course, breakfast is, I always have some coffee too. But if anybody's sort of thinking about taking on dehydrating stuff, a pretty safe bet to start with, and these are absolutely delicious, is dehydrated, really ripe bananas with cinnamon sprinkled on them.
Mm-hmm. That is good.
And they are delicious. So I'll do a bunch of those. Like, for instance, there was a couple of days ago, we had two that went bad. I just put one tray on the dehydrator, threw it in overnight, and it was done. So it's not like I'm, I think the misconception is these guys that are dehydrating their own stuff, they're just spending 5, 6, 7, 8 days, a week knocking this stuff out. And you just compile a surplus of stuff. Like, I'll dehydrate leftovers from dinner, or I'll, you know, I got, maybe we've got a couple days of chili that are left over. Nobody wants, I'll throw that on the dehydrator and then I'll just throw it in a vacuum seal and it's already ready to go for the season. So I'll combine those dehydrated bananas with some cereal and a little bit of nuts. So high carb cereals, dehydrated bananas, again, high carb, a little bit of nuts, not much protein in that, which, you know, a lot of guys would say, oh, well, you know, where's the protein? I don't care about protein. It's not a fuel source to me at that point early in the day. So I don't even mess with it. If we happen to be on something, I can easily put that in my hip pouch and snack on it while we're walking, and still get some fuel in me, as opposed to just having to sit down and have an actual meal. Does that make sense?
Yep.
If we've got the luxury of hunting out of the truck, then that's usually where I'll throw down a big PB&J.
Oh yeah, that sounds good.
Oh dude, I love PB&J.
Yep. Okay, so that's a snack.
Yep. So moving on, I'll just cover a couple of different snacks. So that's one of the snacks I do. Another one, thanks to Mark and Steve over at XO. These guys turned me onto this, is just the plain golden oat Belvita crackers with an almond butter packet. Those things are delicious. That winds up being close to full, I think it's like 600 calories, lots of carbohydrate in that. So that'll appear somewhere in there. Another one that I'll do
is... I think Mark and Steve have turned on half of the hunting community to that trick.
They are spectacular,
it's,
man.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. They are absolutely delicious. I totally agree with you. Then even some simple stuff like, you know, a packet of Austin's cheese and peanut butter crackers. Like I'll keep some of that stuff in there just to keep all of my prep work down. And so, you know, I'm eating probably five or six different snacks and it just varies based on my preferences. You know, sometimes it may be, could be Pop-Tarts. It could be, I keep, another tip, I don't know if it's helpful or not, but I keep in my quote unquote gear room or whatever, a toolbox like you would buy at a hardware store. And I keep it stocked full of all of these snacks. So, you know, when I get home, because, you know, I'm gone so much in September, when I get home, I just pull stuff out of this box. I'm not like going to the grocery or anything. It's all already here ready for me to go. So looking in here, I've got candy bars. I've got different types of low fiber like granola bars that I'm able to snack on. And, you know, I might add some extra carbs to that with, you know, whatever, honey even. I always have a good stash of gummy bears, so that winds up being a snack sometimes. And then those are generally my snacks, if that makes sense. And then for lunch, it varies. If we have the luxury of hunting out of a truck, then I almost always have a bagel. And my hunting buddies, Wayne and Hunter, Crown Over, two awesome guys, turned me on to this. So I call it the Crown Over Special, but it's a blueberry bagel with a spread of cream cheese and some ham on it. And then I'll eat that. If we're hunting out of a truck, then I'll take a, you know, piece of fruit or dehydrated fruit or whatever and have that alongside with it. If we're not, then I still do the bagel, but then I get mayo packets, single mayo packets from restaurants or work, as long as I've got permission to take them. And I mix them with individual packets of tuna and have like a bagel tuna type of a deal back there. And then I may couple that with like five or six cookies or five or six Oreos or a candy bar or something. So, you know, sometimes that meal alone can push towards the 100 grams of carb range, which makes most people feel like they're going to become an instant diabetic. And that might be true if you're working an office job, but when you're back there, you know, my body is just metabolizing that like fire. And that's true of anyone that's hiking. It's not, you know, I'm no one special in that regard. It's bodies are pretty universal with some exception. So sometimes I've met guys that feel like, well, my body's broke. It doesn't work that way. It does work that way in the backcountry. It does not. No one's works that way at a desk job trying to eat 100 grams of carb. And then in the evening, some sort of dehydrated type of a meal. if we're at a truck, then I'll usually, honestly, I buy a couple of cans of like stews and chilies, and then eat that like over Fritos with cheese on it. And then I might have an apple with peanut butter or candy bar and then some apple cider. And so that meal too is really high in carbs, because I want to replenish those glycogen stores. I want to replenish it, the places that my muscles store carbohydrate for the following day. And then also that'll be the highest protein intake that I have all day is at that evening meal.
That's the one I always look forward to, is that evening. Those snacks are good, but that nice, warm, hot, whatever it is, meal in the evening is something I just look forward to. It. It's always good.
Yeah, me too,
I try,
man.
Try to make it my best one. So.
Yeah, it's a tremendous, it's almost a mental relief. And, you know, I can't imagine, like, for me, a piece of all of this is very much like mental. I think one of the questions you'd asked is, you know, how do you balance the quote unquote perfect food with what you actually like? And I think it needs to be a combination of both. So you can't show up with the perfect calorie and carbohydrate, protein, and fat food bag and be disgusted by it, because you won't even eat it. Likewise, you can't show up full, the bag full of just crap that you like, and it doesn't meet what your needs officially are. So it needs to check all of those boxes. I think all of those things are important. And again, you could show up with anything and it would probably work. But as the hunt gets longer, it's important to make sure that you're getting enough. And it's important to make sure that whatever you've got, you like.
I've got a few more questions here. Actually, I think we've kind of already answered these, but I just want to make sure that we hit them. One was, in the backcountry, what macro is most important in surplus? And I think we already kind of beat that up with the carbs. The extra carbs is the one that you're going to want, because that's the fuel to push you through. And then, of course, Bear Taylor asked, why can't beer be healthy? And I wanted to ask it in a little bit different way. Is it such a bad thing? I know a lot of guys do this. The guys that are truck camping, and I even know some guys that hike in that take a couple of beers in their backpack. But if you're truck camping and you want to come back at night and you sit down and you have that nice, warm, hot meal, is there anything wrong with having a couple of beers?
So from a sheer nutrition standpoint, no. General recommendations, even for folks who aren't out hiking, is, you know, one drink per day for women and two drinks or less per day for men is what they consider general, quote unquote, healthy recommendations. So when you're out there and you've got an elk down and you want to celebrate with a beer, is there anything detrimentally from a nutrition standpoint that's going to happen? No. There does become a bit of more of a problem when you're binging on it nightly. and if we want to look at it from a sheer science standpoint, beer is dehydrating. So particularly important in hot summer months and above altitude, where you really need to pay relatively close attention to how much fluid you're getting. If you're peeing a lot of that fluid out because you're drinking so much every night, you can run into some pretty significant problems pretty fast. So, you know, I think part of the conversation needs to involve, okay, well, what's the quantity of it? But I know guys like to celebrate with their buddies having a beer with an elk that they've killed. We're not talking about any sort of detrimental nutrition fallout from doing that at all.
Yeah. All right.
Very good. Hopefully that makes me Bear's friend still.
Yeah, I'm sure he might be mad at you for a day or two, but he'll get over it.
He's a good guy. I know he'll get over it quick.
Yeah, he's good. So, okay. We covered a ton of stuff in here. All of it, I think, is very, very important, but I'm sure one thing that the big takeaway from people is going to be is what's in Kyle's bag as the dietitian, and what's he taking in his food bags. So what we're going to do is, on the Backcountry Rookies webpage, we have our packing lists listed in the menu. And what we're going to do is Kyle's going to type up his packing list, or his food bag packing list, so that you can kind of see and get some ideas based on what he has in there. And then we're also going to put that equation that he talked about on how to kind of develop that, how many calories you need per your body size and body type and all that stuff. So you'll be able to reference that. So Kyle, thank you for putting that together, and it'll be a nice, easy reference that people can check out on the website. I'm sure you're going to get some questions. I hope you get questions from people. Honestly, I hope people reach out and want to ask you more nutrition questions. So how do people get in touch with you if they have questions for you?
Yeah, it's my bar none, my favorite thing, man, is talking to people about this. You can email me at info@v2pnutrition.com. So that's the letter V, the number 2pnutrition.com. So info@v2pnutrition.com. The same handle or whatever the term is for Instagram, Facebook, all those social media things. Those are probably the best ways to get a hold of me. You can V2pnutrition.com is the website too, and so there's testimonials on there, a little bit of the story about how Valley to Peak got started, and information about me, as well as a sheet at the bottom of the page to get a hold of me if you want to reach out through that.
Perfect, and I'll have all that linked in the show description as well, so you can get to it. Also, if you can't remember it, there's links on the partners page to get to Kyle. And then, of course, we'll have his what's in his food bag page. And another way to get in touch with Kyle, and I think this is awesome. Every Friday, Kyle does a frequently asked question. What do you call it on Friday? Your Instagram questions?
The Friday FAQ.
Friday FAQs. So Kyle puts it up every Friday morning, nice and early. And it's basically just an Instagram question page. And it's in the story, and you can go on there and ask him any nutrition question you want. Kyle, if you want to expand on that a little bit, because I think that's a really good, cool resource for people to get in touch with you.
Yeah. So initially it was just kind of centered around performance nutrition and athletes and things of that nature, which is the thing I predominantly focus on. But it sort of has spun off into including just general nutrition recommendations and information and questions about nutrition and training and general health, and it's just a whole good mess of different things, which I love the spin that it's taken. So really, there's no question that's off limits, and if I don't know the answer, I'll say I don't know the answer, but if I do, then I do my best not to only answer but answer it thoroughly. And there is a whole host of old questions in, I don't know all the Instagram terms, but if you go to the Valley to Peak Instagram page down at the bottom, I've saved all of those in like this in the saved stories or whatever it is. So you can look at all the past ones too. And if you got a question you're curious about, or you read something somewhere and want to know if it's true or whatever, you can post it up on there and I'll answer it.
Awesome. Thank you, Kyle. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on, sharing all the info with us.
Absolutely, man. It's always my pleasure to chat with you. I've loved seeing you guys do so well and just encouraging people to get out there and do the things that seem rather intimidating and take some of the ambiguity out of it and help them get out there, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's our goal, is to get people out there. So, all right, man, thank you, and we'll – good luck. If I don't talk to you, I'm sure I will. But if I don't talk to you between now and archery season, best of luck to you. And
I appreciate it. You too, man.
All right. Cool. I think we'll cut it right there. Okay. So a big thank you to Kyle for coming on the show and talking to us about nutrition. I know he's very, very passionate about it. It's what he does. He loves to talk about it. I think if you have any questions whatsoever, you can reach out to Kyle. He's always full of good information. I've had a lot of people that have emailed me or direct messaged me or whatever after talking to Kyle. So they've listened to a previous podcast that he's been on, and they've reached out to Kyle, and they've gotten great, great information, and they've responded to me and said thanks for having him on the show. So reach out to him is a great resource. And then also, like we talked about, use that Friday FAQs, those frequently asked questions. It's a really easy way to throw a question out there, and he responds to every one of them. So thanks to Kyle. Thank you to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network for having us on. And I also wanted to say, just real quick here in the end, thank you to the Colorado Backcountry Hunters and Anglers for inviting us out and having me on there as a guest speaker. And Jordan was there with me, and we just had a great time out there. So thank you to Colorado BHA. I really, really appreciate that opportunity, and hopefully it was well served. I think that's it. That's all I got. So thanks for listening. Never stop learning. And I'm out of here.